Mini episode 982 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone, to FDH Lounge mini episode number 982. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris here with two of my fellow FDH Lounge original dignitaries, Jason Jones and Chris Galloway. We are here breaking down the 2018 NFL Draft. Last week at about this time, we were previewing it. Today, we are reviewing it. We are going through and we are seeing who are the winners and the losers of the draft. And again, not afraid to dive into that early verdict of history here with the draft just having ended yesterday as we are taping this. I'm going to give at the outset here in terms of a breakdown. If you looked at, and hopefully you did, 2018 Pro Football Draftology, available on the main page at FantasyDraftHelp.com, our draft guide there, it included top 200 overall rankings from Jason Jones, our senior editor, and of course now the proprietor as well of Gridiron and Hardwood, as well as the position-by-position rankings. So on a pure ranking on that, assigning 200 points to the top player all the way down to 1 point for the 200th best player on there, here's the top 10 of how teams graded out in the draft. Number one, Denver. Two, Cleveland. Three, Cincinnati. Four, Dallas. Five, the New York Giants. Six, Baltimore. Seven, Indianapolis. Eight, Oakland. Nine, New England. And 10, Pittsburgh. Let's look at the bottom 10. Let's count our way up. The Los Angeles Rams, who didn't place much of a premium on the draft this year, they traded away a lot of their key draft picks for more immediate help. Unsurprisingly, they finished at the bottom. 31st, Kansas City, 30th, Arizona, 29th, Detroit, 28th, New Orleans, 27th, San Francisco, 26th, Atlanta, 25th, the New York Jets, 24th, Philadelphia, and 23rd, Minnesota. The other metric that we have here is 50% that rating, just off of the top 200, and then we add in where players were taken in the top four rounds, with there being some additional bonus points. And bonus points as well for filling needs on a sliding scale as well through rounds 1 through 4. To me, this is a little bit more of a pure indicator of how teams did. Here's how it goes. And by the way, even this has some things in it that where there's a human element that we can't quite control and pinpoint. And I'm going to get to that with the Cleveland Browns, but here's how it shakes out. Number one, Indianapolis. Two, Dallas. Three, Cleveland. Four, Tampa Bay. Five, Baltimore. Six, Cincinnati. 7, the New York Giants, 8, Pittsburgh, 9, Denver, 10, Washington. Coming up from the bottom, once again, number 32 is the Los Angeles Rams, 31, Detroit, 30, New Orleans, 29, Arizona, 28, Kansas City, 27, Atlanta, 26, Philadelphia, 25, the New York Jets, 24, San Francisco, 23, Houston. Many of the same teams represented on both of these, unsurprisingly, as these are somewhat similar metrics, if not completely the same. So we're going to start breaking down the 2018 draft and seeing what these guys thought. I bring in, first of all, here Chris Galloway. Chris, your early thoughts on the draft?
Well, I will tell you, I loved what the New York Giants did in this draft. I love, you know, getting Saquon Barkley, the second pick, and I'm saying this not, you know, throwing in my personal opinion about a ceiling or a floor of a player, but taking the assumption of what a player, what most people think a player's ceiling could be, getting Barkley, getting Will Hernandez at the top of the second, a guard they so desperately needed on that front line to go with their new left tackle, getting their potential developmental quarterback of the future in the fourth round with Kyle LaLeta, and then, in my mind, a steal in getting Lorenzo Carter at outside linebacker. I love what the Giants did in this draft. This felt like an old-timey type draft from Dave Gettleman, and I think the Giants should be applauded for what they accomplished.
They did a very good job, I thought. They really got some excellent players. I've said all along, I thought Saquon Barkley is a franchise player. As I turn to you, Jason, I'm going to preface this with the usual, I kid because I love disclaimer, but when I was recording some audio with you the other night for Hardwood and Gridiron in the immediate aftermath of the draft, as you and I were digesting what happened at 1 and at 4 overall, I congratulated you for not rationalizing about any of the picks here and kind of seeing it for what it was. And from what I've seen of Facebook this weekend, I guess I spoke too soon. So I just couldn't help but break your balls a little bit on that one there, Jason.
Well, yeah. here's the thing, and I don't know, some of this stuff is how you raise the people that influence your sports loyalty and whatnot. In the moment, absolutely, it was not what I anticipated, it was not what I wanted them to do. There's a part of me, though, that reverts back to your typical fan who says, well, these are my guys now, so let's try to get the positive in it. Now, some of that has yet to be seen. I'm probably going to feel differently if Darnold goes off and he's everything that we think he was going to be for the Jets. That might make holding on to that a little bit more difficult. But, it's just as far as 1-4 go. Here's my thing, and I don't know, maybe not everyone's going to grasp this, but if we go back, Martavius Mingo, Sean Thompson, and a few others that just, you look at being in a good draft position, and a pick is made that is not the pick that you would have foreshadowed, and it isn't a pick that you can rationalize. Those didn't make any sense, and there's a lot of Browns picks that just, they're not my picks, and they don't make sense. This is a little different. They still weren't my picks, but I can see the logic behind it. I can see the rationale behind it. I can see the motivation behind it. And at least that provides some reassurance, at least now in, April, May, June, that it's not the doom and gloom situation I thought it was when it happened.
Well, I do hear you on that. And again, to me, it's not zero chance of these guys breaking out. I like the odds a lot better with some of the players that they had overlooked at those positions. And I will say this, Chris, I was listening today. This is not necessarily a slam on this individual, but certain people are known more for certain sports. Wasn't necessarily expecting to pick up a huge NFL insight from Chris Mannix as I was listening to Fox Sports Radio. But a very interesting thing here, when he was talking about the importance of the four-man rush, Super Bowls, of course, I know you know well, the Giants and the Patriots ones in particular, what they were able to do with the four-man rush. I wasn't the biggest Bradley Chubb guy out there, but the thought of putting him there with Garrett on the other side and what a four-man rush could basically do for your entire defense, this is one of these things where, again, you had pointed out to me that you thought there was a chance that Ward might just be a cover corner, which I know made Jason very unhappy when I shared that with him. But this is one of these things where I'm left to kind of say, at this point in time, gee, I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong about these guys. I hope I'm wrong about these picks. But there's just no other way to say it. Hoping Rick Morris is wrong after the last 15 years of the Browns and what he has said about them every step of the way is a thin reed to hang one's hopes on, Chris.
Well, I think the interesting thing is, yes, we never want to hold out hope on based on Rick Morris being wrong.
Yes.
Although, ironically, that's a great way to fulfill hope. I would say, the interesting thing about the Mayfield pick is that, Dorsey's coming in as a football guy. And, there was supposedly going to be this big pushback on analytics in Cleveland. I'm not saying that there was, this was an analytics-driven decision. But it's interesting to me that Mayfield graded out as the best, from an analytics standpoint, the best quarterback available. So, you talk about hope, and you can say to yourself as a fan, well, that's interesting, because the football guys picked exactly the same guy that the analytics guys would pick. So does that mean that that's a convergence and that Baker Mayfield is more likely to be the most successful quarterback in this class? Maybe. Because you don't get a lot of times where the football guys and the analytics guys are in complete agreement. It's also interesting to me that since the draft, we've heard of a few teams now supposedly had Mayfield ranked as their top quarterback on the board, including the Jets. So it doesn't sound like it's a thing that the Browns are sort of out there on their own, out on this limb saying, where, you know, it's ride or die with Mayfield, and we're the only ones that think this. Supposedly there were other teams in the top, you know, dozen that had Mayfield ranked as their top quarterback on the board. So, you know, time will tell. Obviously, I was a huge Chubb advocate. I believed adding Chubb, his ability to even play inside of Ogba would have been dynamic for the Browns. It just seems to me that this was a pick that they made based on Greg Williams' defense and the need to have a cover corner that can be out there, you know, isolated on an island and to take away a number one wide receiver that they didn't have. But they didn't have enough speed in the secondary, so they went out and made that a priority, getting the top-rated cornerback on their board and then hoping to plug play. Now, I have doubts as to whether Ward will develop that way. You know, if their scouting is right, it could end up being the right pick over Chubb because it allows Greg Williams' press defense to play the way he wants it to be. That means that maybe, Peppers doesn't need to be 65, you know, miles off the line of scrimmage. Doesn't have to be out at Catawba Island trying to, defend the pass. Passing game of the opposition. So I think that was the rationale behind that pick, and you can certainly look at that and say, okay, I mean, I get it. As some of the other things that they did, I love Nick Chubb. I think he's going to be a workhorse for them. Obviously the caveat there is as long as the knee stays healthy. I think he's going to be a workhorse. I think he's a guy that initially it'll be by committee with the running backs they have now, but I wouldn't be surprised in a year or two they cut Carlos Hyde loose and it was just Chubb carrying that load. And then obviously, lastly, I would love to just pat myself on the back and point out that I repeatedly mentioned Austin Corbett as a guy to watch out for in the second or third rounds. I don't think a lot of people had it very high on their boards. It's a versatile line player, can play all the positions on the line, offensive line. He plays 4 years at left tackle at Nevada, although he does more project in his guard. He can play, he can even play center, and I think that's actually where they may eventually be looking at him for. But this year, they may, if Coleman struggles, they may put Corbett out there on the left tackle spot and just see what he can do. So Austin Corbett, I like that pick because I like that young man. I think he's versatile. I think he's tough, and I think he's going to add something to offensive on the offensive line to keep dividing down.
There may very well be worse ideas that they could have than trying him at left tackle, given what's on the roster right now. But yeah, you had kind of alluded to it there. One of the big surprises after night one was that anyone who aspired to sport a Chubb Browns jersey, interesting if you take a pause in the middle of that sentence, that they could still get one. It would be Nick Chubb on night two going to the Browns. And that's a thing where, Jason, I had alluded to this before as far as the human element not being taken into consideration in that statistic that I put together there. The Browns scored out very high as far as filling needs. Obviously, quarterback was a pressing need. Another running back in that rotation certainly was as well. They passed over Darius Geis to make that pick. Ronald Jones, the guy that I really like the most, they passed him over to take Chubb. So it's necessitated to give them the points on that scale for trying to fill that need. But it didn't go with the guys that I, quite frankly, would have gone with. Same thing at number one there. I don't have to say any more about how big of a Sam Darnold proponent I am, and yet the system rewards them, the scoring system, for taking Baker Mayfield there because he was a fairly top-rated quarterback, and they went to try to fill that need. So it's kind of an incomplete picture a little bit in terms of how teams did. I will say this as well, too, and going back and looking at it in years past, what's interesting, Jason, is that on some of the metrics the last couple of years, believe it or not, the Browns actually scored out fairly well. They did on last year's draft. So maybe player development has been every bit as big of a crisis with this team as the drafting itself.
Yeah, there's definitely something to be said for that. The interesting thing, as we look at these metrics, and what was actually done, and we'll see this play out in other teams. But if we look at the Browns specifically, it's almost like they were never, based on the metrics and based on the math, never going to be the top team no matter what they did, because John Dorsey, and I'm not one to try to pin someone's previous experience as, you know, an indicator of what they're going to do going forward. But with picks like Antonio Callaway, Davies Ratley, even Jannard Avery, who, after I've had some time to really look at him, I absolutely love, are picks that just were not on anybody's radar. So it's interesting to see how addressing some needs up front, especially in, let's say, the first five picks, really probably are what were the breadwinners for them, because when you come back around to those day three picks, I don't think anybody had any of the day three picks on the radar. And, you know, it works out fine because you're coming to it from two different angles, addressing needs, and then hoping that you're unearthing something that has issues you can live with, but has the upside foreseen, a little bit like the Caleb Brantley pick last year.
Right, and we'll have to see how that pans out. The Callaway pick seems very comparable to it as far as going for somebody with character issues attached to his selection. Overall, just...
I actually disagree on that.
Really? Okay.
A little bit. All right. You know, well, I'm going to disagree on this end. But not a positive. As I listened to on a radio show this morning, I was that was associated with the Florida football program, and I'll leave their name out of it, you know, mentioned that, you know, Callaway's been, quote-unquote, a dirtbag since he arrived in Gainesville. He's had, you know, sexual assault accusations, arrests for drug paraphernalia, suspended an entire year, using stolen credit cards, failing his combine drug test. Brantley didn't have a long laundry list of things against him. He had an accusation that arose out of an altercation at a bar nightclub. I guess it was more of a bar than a nightclub. When that was, witnesses came forward and said, you know, in the end, they said absolutely it was not him, that he was actually the one that was assaulted by the woman. Now, whatever that situation is, that's a silly, you know, it's bad judgment to get yourself in a position where that sort of thing happened. But he did not have a whole laundry list of things that were out there that he just said, well, there's the newest, the latest. Whereas Callaway, let's be frank, has been a bad apple his entire time in Gainesville. This isn't, you know, and I know after he got drafted, he said, well, I made a mistake. You mean you made a mistake, and then another mistake, and then another mistake. Oh, and then here's another mistake, and let's throw another. I mean, come on. You know, Brantley had an accusation leveled against him that was eventually withdrawn by prosecutors and police. Callaway has convictions, actual things that are verifiable, he was suspended for. It's a laundry list, so I don't think that they're different. I mean, I do think they're very different. And I don't, you know, my initial thought on Callaway was, how can we bring him into the locker room when we have a guy like Josh Gordon who seems like he's finally, you know, on the wagon, getting his stuff together, and what is it now? Hey, Josh, we want you to meet your new teammate. Why don't you guys hang out and be buddies now? Wow. I just think I get Callaway's raw ability. The guy has literal potential gold jacket ability, you know, projection-wise. But the problem is that he is just a bad egg. And I'm shocked that they made that pick.
Jason, I got to say this, man. If him being in the same wide receiver room as Josh Gordon, if he leads Josh Gordon astray, I fear what your reaction is going to be in terms of going after this guy. You're going to end up doing hard time, Jason, because of what you're going to do to him.
Well, and here's the irony, and I don't mean to be contrarian on every turn. This is going to sound wildly and almost blindly optimistic. But the reason I'm not worried about it, at least at this point, and maybe it's delusional on my part, is I think if you step back from it, the fact that Josh Gordon's in that locker room, but the fact that Jarvis Landry's there too, if we're talking about just wide receivers, there's a part of you that wants to say this is exactly the kind of locker room you bring a guy like that into. And part of it is my resolve for where Gordon is. Now, I don't mean to take this off the sports context and into more of a you know, mental approach to addiction and get into a conversation that might be less exciting. But Josh Gordon, from my perspective, has displayed a number of things that should tell most people, I'm not saying don't worry, but don't worry, because
we've crossed the point now that we've never seen before, man. And I think that with some of the people they brought in, the attitude that you get from a Tyrod Taylor, hopefully, you know, different perspectives from, you know, the Hyde and Hubbard from Pittsburgh and a whole bunch of other people. I got a weird gut feeling that you could bring literal cancer into that locker room, and either the cancer goes or the cancer conforms. Now, again, might be delusional on my part, but I say for all the reasons people are concerned, I think those are all the reasons that we should, at least on the surface, feel relatively optimistic about that. Now, Rick, you're absolutely right. The first time it looks like, you know, things are bad, or, you know, if he starts missing meetings, or is late for practice, or, God forbid, gets caught in any sort of legal issue, yeah, my first reaction is going to be get him the heck out of Josh Gordon's way. So that's going to be my ultimate priority there.
Well, the one thing, and I said this to Chris yesterday off air, is that I'm actually, believe it or not, slightly less hard on this selection than he is, which I know seems hard to believe given my overall posture to what the Browns are doing these days, but it's because I'm casting this eye with a lot of shade towards the amount of talent on this team and the amount of talent I feel they didn't bring in free agency. So to me, gambling on talent, again, I'm just glad to see some on this team. You don't really have a lot of exceptional players on this team at this point in time, so count me as somebody who's desperate enough to take a gamble here or there, which is not the best reason to take somebody, quite frankly, desperation, but that's where we are with this team. Stepping back, taking a little bit of a wider look here, I want to get some thoughts from you guys at some of the other stories of the draft, whatever you guys think is noteworthy. To me, I look at Shaquem Griffin going in the fifth round to Seattle, a very interesting pick for them, somebody who, if you just focus on his pluses as far as opposed to the obvious minus, does seem like he's somebody who's going to be able to be, if nothing else, a great energy player, special teams, a rotational player, and maybe more. Certainly a great story there. Let's hear it for the Miami Dolphins. The value of the draft, Quentin Poling from the Harvard on the Hocking in the seventh round there. A very underlooked linebacker, as I think we can all agree. So congratulations to my Miami Dolphins for making that pick. Conversely here, the walk of shame, I think I alluded to this before as far as opportunity cost points when I was doing our scoring system here. P.J. Hall goes in the second round to the Oakland Raiders. He was outside of Jason's top 200 overall. That is what caused the Oakland Raiders to be subtracted 75 opportunity points on our system, 57th pick overall. I was looking at. So, yeah, 57th pick overall and outside the top 200. As far as value goes, to use that old Mad Men line, not great, Bob. So, in terms of looking at this, I'll first turn to you, Chris. Any noteworthy stories that you feel like maybe didn't get enough play through the course of the 3 days, or maybe they did get enough play, but you think it's noteworthy enough to get into more?
I love the Grissom story, going to Seattle, reuniting with his twin brother. I think a lot of us thought that was a real possibility, you know, in that sort of fifth, especially because they had the Seahawks had 4 or 5 sixth round picks, so they could easily use one there on a guy like that. Now, I will say this, having watched him in college, you know, this past year, I watched several UCF games on TV, obviously the bowl game as well. It doesn't seem to be a thing that holds him back in terms of his ability to make plays. Now, I get bigger, faster, stronger, need to be able to shed blockers and all the rest of that at the NFL. But he was playing at a high level of Division I college football. And if you had stopped and told me, if you hadn't told me that he was missing a hand, I wouldn't have known that he was so effective. So I'm, you know, maybe for Seattle, this is, you know, not just a special teams player, a situational player. You know, he may be actually able to play for them for quite a while. I certainly, this young man, with his ability to, that he's shown so far, I would not put it past him. I would not wager against him. And so I think it's, from that standpoint, it's a great story. And being able to be reunited with his brother, you know, tip of the cap to Pete Carroll and the Seahawks organization for making that happen. You know, I have to say also, Raiders, you know, as I feared going saying that I think that the John Gruden reincarnation with the Raiders will be an abject failure. I think Gruden's great weakness has always been talent evaluation. I believe that before he was on ESPN, and then one only needs to have watched all his QB camps, where he's enamored with every single stiff quarterback that comes through there, talks about how great they're going to be, to know that I just think he's lousy at the talent evaluation. And I think this draft and what the Raiders did in it reflects that directly. So I think the Raiders did a terrible job in this draft, and I think it's going to reflect, and it's going to be the beginning of a bumpy number of years for Chucky in the Oakland / Las Vegas the head coaching role that eventually we'll see him, you know, probably after 4 or 5 years out of that 10-year contract and back in the TV booth. I also want to say I loved the creativity and the work that the Ravens did, you know, moving up and down in the draft and getting, I will say this, I don't necessarily like all the picks that they made. They're not picks that I would have made, but I love how they were active and, you know, getting Lamar Jackson and acknowledging that it's going to be time in a year or two to move on from Flacco in that contract. I'm not a believer in Hayden Hurst in the first round. I think that's probably a terrible pick. But again, you need a tight end. So they grabbed him and Mark Andrews. One of those two guys will probably be able to play. Getting Zeus Brown's kid in the third round, I like that move. Although I'm not sure he's going to play tackle in this league. I think he might be more of a guard long term. And then, so I just like how they were active. And, you know, whether you like the picks or not, they really understood how to work the draft and move up and kind of target guys that they were looking for. I do want to say, though, to close the book on Callaway with the Browns, you know, the only thing, I know what you're saying about bringing in talent, Rick, and like I said, the kid has talent. If he stays clean, he's got potential, you know, literal multi-Pro Bowl, if not Hall of Fame talent. What the problem is, you never move up and give up assets for risks, and that's what I have a problem with what Dorsey did there. It's one thing to let a risky player fall to you. You don't ever then give up assets to move up to then take a risk. Because you're already taking a risk by moving up and giving up assets. So now you've doubled down on your risk. So it damn well better pay off.
Well, of all things, though, Chris, you don't have to worry about my insufficient cynicism in this. In hanging out with some friends last night, I was already referring to him as Jeremiah Farms 2K18. So I'm right there. If the pick craters, which I certainly hope it doesn't, but if it does, it's not going to break my heart because I'll be prepared for it. A couple other notes to get to, and then I'll see what some of your notes are, Jason. Josh Rosen going to the 10th pick to Arizona should work out pretty well for him and for them, but I'd said before the draft, this kid is like an annoying Seinfeld character and just backs it up even more with his whole 9 mistakes in front of me. Just shut your hole, Rook, and play the game. The guy, he is the rare example of somebody that might just be a big enough a-hole to really wear thin in a locker room, and we'll see how that pans out.
Great question on that, though. Let me ask you something.
Yeah.
Everybody likes to bust his chops for comments like that. Lamar Jackson came out and said he's a Super Bowl winning quarterback. Why isn't everybody busting his chops? Hey, rookie, shut up and sit down. I mean, Lamar Jackson just came out and said, hey, I'm a Super Bowl winning quarterback. You are? I mean, we're not busting his chops for it.
Well, here's the thing.
I just think there's a certain narrative right now with Rosen, which is let's all just pile on.
But here's the thing, though.
One of those is a positive thing and one is a negative thing.
I was just going to say that. Yeah. Lamar Jackson is not diminishing the people taken in front of him just to burnish himself, Chris. Do you not see the difference there?
Listen, I get it, but I don't take it as Rosen. Listen, every year there's a player that comes to this draft, or multiple, say, with that chip on my shoulder, you know, I was picked in the fourth round. I'm going to make all the teams that didn't draft me pay, okay? That's basically what he's saying, is these teams in front of me, you know, made a mistake. They should have taken me. I guess I just feel like there's so much. The narrative is, you know, everything with him is negative, so therefore that's how we're going to interpret it.
I guess the whole thing, though, is that it's been more than 20 years, Chris, since the Jerry Maguire movie and Show Me the Money and, like, isn't this kind of crap played out by now? Isn't it, though? To have some loudmouth rook coming into the league and I'm going to wreck the league and make you... come on, we've heard it all a million times before. If nothing else, it's not even creative or original anymore, dude.
Well, I don't know that... I mean, again, I don't know that Josh Rosen was out there trying to be original or creative. He was asked a question, and he's like, he believes in himself that much. And yeah, is he a bit cocky? Sure he is. I mean, but I guess I'm just not offended by it the way some people want to be so offended by everything that comes out of his mouth. I mean, he's got a big ego. He's a smart guy. He believes in himself. And look, he's going to get his chance to prove it on the field. I mean, and look... there's going to be some defensive end, and Aaron Darnold or somebody's going to take his head off and say, "Welcome to the NFL," So he's gonna pay for it on the field. Let's see what he does.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. And that's, I have to say, as well, that again, and I've admitted to this, I've copped to this, that this draft process, like very little else, seems to bring out my get off my lawn tendencies. So I'll freely cop to that when it comes to Josh Rosen and some of these other punks in the draft. I just don't really have a lot of tolerance at this point in time for some of that kind of stuff. I will say, Jason, as I get ready to throw it to you and looking at some of my other notes here, one of them being I was so discombobulated after the Browns made their number one and number four picks the other night that I couldn't even think of the phrase I wanted to use when I was talking about on the off chance that they move Ward to, say, free safety or something like that down the road, what the best case scenario might be. And I've used it a lot of times on this show with Chris, and he's used it with me, force multiplier, the kind of player who can make players around him better. And I think the best example we saw of that in the draft, and maybe the single best value that any team got, especially in the first round, Derwin James to the LA Chargers at 17. He is going to be tasty in that defense there with his ability to impact what they already have, some of the other playmakers there. Derwin James exemplifies to me potential force multiplier like few other players in this draft. So, again, just some of my general observations on this, and I'll throw it to you, Jason, for some of the other things you think were noteworthy from this draft.
Well, yeah, the Derwin James thing was something I was following with intense fervor because I was hoping there'd be an opportunity to trade back in and get him. At the time, my thought was, if you want to get DB, get that one. But a couple of quick things. And it's funny how this is rare. We don't generally disagree as often as I assume we are here. Just looking at some of the teams that did really, really well that aren't being talked about for some reason. And I'm not saying this because I'm here, but look at Denver. Denver did something that I wasn't really anticipating, and even Elway said that he did not anticipate Chubb was even going to be there. But I'm just going to throw out numbers, and these won't really mean anything right now. Bradley Chubb, best defensive player in the draft, arguably we can hash that out, but I think most people would agree with that. Cortland Sutton was probably at worst projected to be the second or third wide receiver taken. Royce Freeman, and this will be interesting for anyone who's checked out Rick's fantasy guides. I felt like Royce Freeman was a brilliant stroke to get the last, say, featured back of that tier, if that makes sense.
Right.
They weren't going to get Barkley. They weren't going to be able to get guys like Chubb, and they essentially didn't even look at guys. Sony Michel, Rojo. They just weren't going to get those guys. When they came back around in the third round, lo and behold, they still have what I believe is the last guy of that group. And they were able to get him in the third round instead of spending a high pick in the second round. And then they followed that up later on in the third round with a 6'2" corner out of Boston College, who I've very quietly been sort of keeping my eye on as one of those day two, early day three guys that could really, really be good. Josie Jewell from Iowa, a nice inside linebacker, and if Iowa makes anything, it's linebackers and offensive linemen. And then to come back with Deshaun Hamilton out of Penn State was a nice little move there. They got to get younger at wide receiver. I don't know how long Demaryius Thomas is going to be on that team. So I feel like if you only look at those picks, just look at the first four rounds, I feel like they hit in a number of different ways, which is really intriguing. And the other real big intriguing team, or at least draft for a team that I'm interested in, and I'm surprised not more people are talking about, is how Tampa Bay, very similar to Cleveland in the early going, made picks that seemed to define a shift in their culture. They specifically went after big, mean, aggressive guys. I don't know if that speaks to some degree of softness that they identified within themselves. But you take out Rojo, who's going to be a nice sort of catch-all, can do everything really well, maybe doesn't do anything at an elite level. Real solid running back that they got in the second. But then Vita Vea, Alex Kappa, who Mike Mayock said is the angriest tape he's ever watched. Jordan Whitehead, safety out of Pitt. And even Carlton Davis, to some degree, was another big corner I was looking at. It just looks like they had it in their mind that they had to go get guys that are not going to be afraid to put you on your ass, which is interesting. And when you look at that new defensive line, it is a bit scary if they're looking at, you know, the Philadelphia Eagles or the Los Angeles Rams. I don't want to call it a blueprint, but it does look like they are trying to build up that defensive line outward, which is interesting. Now, where we have a little bit of a disagreement here, and this is going to be fun, is Baltimore. I got no issue with Lamar Jackson. I think the value is solid. I thought anyone taking him above 20 was out of their mind. Once we get into the 20s, you know, it's open season there. I'm a little shocked at the Hayden Hurst not getting any love. I mean, maybe it's just a difference of opinion, but I see Greg Olsen and him all over again. Well-rounded, probably a better pass catcher than a blocker, and yes, spent some time in baseball, so maybe we'd like it better if he'd spent, you know, 3 or 4 years playing football first. The Orlando Brown thing, I'm sorry, but for me, I wouldn't touch Orlando Brown with somebody else's pick. I know that his father had a successful career, not being the greatest when it comes to measurables, but good grief, Orlando Brown was horrible. Not only is he not fast, quick, he doesn't work well with his hands, his foot is slow, he looks bad in drills. I mean, it's a great legacy pick. I'm glad they're happy with it. Again, maybe I'm wrong about this, and when he just goes to play football, he's good. But, man, this whole pre-draft process, there was nothing about him that I liked. Now, I do like, I guess, hedging their bets on tight end a little bit, even though I think Mark Andrews is more of a polished all-around tight end, even though I've heard recently that he isn't the biggest fan of blocking, so that makes that whole dynamic a little interesting. And I really do like Deshaun Elliott. I don't know why he fell, but that was a late pick they made that I really did like. And coming back around to the Rosen thing, look, at this point, it could just have been a bad moment, and the guy just was frustrated, just like Aaron Rodgers was, just like Brady Quinn was. But, yeah, I go all the way back to January. I've been calling him Jay Cutler since then. The guy can spin it. There's no question about it. He's got a really attractive ball, how it comes out, how it's delivered. My issue with him is above the shoulders, though. And I'm not going to say I get in line with the people that say maybe he doesn't like it enough or want it enough. I'm sure he does. I'm sure he's every bit the competitor everyone else. But my concern is it's not just, do you think you're the best quarterback in the draft? Yes. No, he found ways to bring that up, be a little snarky pretty much all the time, which makes me concerned that after his ability, do you really want to deal with that Jay Cutler-esque attitude if that's what it is? Now, could be wrong. We could just be all painting him with an unfair brush, and we'll see what happens. But for me, there's, you know, you can say a lot of things, and we can shrug that off and go, hey, he's just being a competitor. But it was the sort of, I don't know, rubbing a little stank on it that kind of rubbed me the wrong way. Now, that being said, he can spin it, he can throw it. If they can keep him upright, if he doesn't have to run for his life at any point, he might be very good. And maybe we look back on it and say people were worried for nothing. But those are the big ones that jumped out at me. I'll be honest, I really hate Seattle for taking Griffin. I get it's a great story, and I'm happy for him. But there is a little bit of selfishness there because I really didn't want that guy. I don't have an issue with the hand. And when you put on the tape, man, he's impressive. I think if used properly, he could factor in on sub-packages, specifically the absolute passing downs, where you could drop him back and have him play very husky, strong safety, because the one thing that never seemed to get talked about, especially from his pro day, we saw him run at the combine. We knew he could do certain linebacker things well. But on his pro day, they actually put him in DB drills, and he did remarkably well. So, again, another one of these positional flexibility guys that I really, really wanted. But you can't dislike the story, that's for sure.
Absolutely. I agree with that. I think everybody roots for that guy to do well. Before I get ready to go around the horn one more time here with any additional observations you guys have, there's something that jumps out at me, and that's when you look at the draft on Wikipedia here, the different columns that they have, everything broken out into. My eye is drawn to the conference column at the top of the first round. Boy, is this going to bust a few narratives. We know the players who went in the spots. Let's look at the conferences. Number one overall, Big 12. Second pick was from the Big 10. Third pick, Pac-12. Fourth pick, back to the Big 10. Fifth pick, ACC. Sixth pick, Notre Dame. Seventh pick, Mountain West. Eighth pick, SEC, if you need it, clones. How about that? SEC clocking in for the first time with the eighth pick overall. That's kind of funny. That's going to burst a few narratives up in Bristol, Connecticut, and some other places. So I'll turn it back around to you, Chris. Any additional thoughts we didn't get to that you have about this draft?
Yeah, I just want to say on the record, you know, listen, Josh Rosen is an ass. I'm not saying he's not.
We all agree.
I'm just saying that, you know, sometimes we make more of it than because of who it is than necessarily, you know, in terms of, you know, what it really means in the big picture. I will say this. Jason's right about if they can keep him upright, the Cardinals are really going to have to get better on that offensive line in order for him to have success going forward. You know, and as far as, you know, the SEC narrative that you just mentioned, hey, look, there's only the narrative if players that are drafted from the SEC, regardless of where they're drafted, don't perform. So if the guys like Aaron Tane and others don't pan out, then that becomes a narrative. You know, where they were drafted, I don't think is something that anyone's going to suddenly say, well, we're not going to start really paying enough, you know, putting enough credence into SEC players anymore.
Right.
I will say this. I didn't like the tight end picks that Baltimore made, but I am willing to say this. If anybody can make tight end picks and knows tight ends, it's Ozzie Newsome. So I am willing to say, like, hey, I could be totally wrong. It's two tight ends as it relates to those picks because Ozzie, I would trust Ozzie Newsome on picking tight ends before I would trust Chris Galloway. So willing to admit that. And I agree with Jason. I had the Giants with an A-plus draft. I also had the Broncos with an A-plus draft. They were the two that were at the top of my draft in terms of grades. I thought obviously I was a Bradley Chubb fan and everything that the John Elway accomplished that Jason already outlined, I thought was spot on and got them an A-plus in my ranking. And if Case Keenum pans out for them, then it's a good draft. It's going to pair well with getting that quarterback. If Keenum, you know, sort of reverts to pre-Vikings, then they'll be right back there looking for a quarterback next year in a year where it looks like defensive line and defensive tackles are going to be reigning supreme in the 2019 draft.
I agree with a lot of what you said right there, and I'll tell you what, too. Let's bring up somebody else that I think we can trust with tight ends at this point in time here. I had the great honor of going back on with my good friend Joe Stazek the other night on 97.5 The Fanatic in Philadelphia and talking a little bit NFL draft, and I was putting over the Eagles for taking Goddard there with their tight end pick, and you pair him up with Ertz, I really think that's going to be a great thing for Philly. They weren't especially ambitious in this draft as far as what they were trying to do. They've used the trades and free agency and other parts of the offseason to try to augment going into next year. But the targeting that they did in certain places in the draft, I think, is really going to pay dividends. And getting a second tight end with soft hands, to me, was an excellent move by the defending world champions and something that sets them up to make another strong run in addition to everything else they have in place there. So I'll turn to you, Jason. Any additional thoughts you have on this year's draft?
Well, since you're talking about Philly real quick, I didn't like most of what they did. There are about three picks in there that I really, really liked, especially for where they got them. It was also nice to see, I forget who it was, the guy giving the pick, but the...
David Akers.
The whole David Akers, the whole NFC East joining with the Dallas Cowboy fans was interesting for about 5 minutes, and they got really old. But I love the them taking a guy named Dallas. but yeah, no, I think that's great for him with Ertz. I think Josh Sweat would be nice. I don't know if he's going to get much time with his hands at third, though, with that defensive line. And then, of course, taking Jordan Mailata, the Australian rugby player who's going to attempt to convert to offensive tackle, getting into the seventh round, can't really beat that. My other sort of dark horse project offensive tackle name was Desmond Harrison out of West Georgia, who, ironically, Cleveland picked up as an undrafted free agent. You know, there's a lot to like about what's going on, at least for the teams that I believe needed to do the most. I think most of those did do really, really well. To the Giants' point, the Giants, I think, are the only team where you can look at every pick they made and go, yep, I didn't know if it was any of that. Like, Denver did great through four rounds, and then they started fired. The Giants took what we believe will be future starters or future contributors, some earlier than others, and I echo Chris's sentiment about Lorenzo. Geez, I'm drawing blank again. Hold on a second. Lorenzo Carter. Did not believe he was going to be there then. So, all in all, I think the bad teams got better. I think some of the good teams picked up some pieces that they'll like, especially with the likes of New England. One thing that I find intriguing, and I don't know if it's them being lazy or if it's just how it fell, but as fans of teams in the AFC North, did you take a moment to chuckle when Pittsburgh took James Washington and then followed that up with Mason Rudolph?
Maybe, but I was just seething that they got James Washington because I like him.
I don't think either one of those picks are going to pan out for the Steelers, so I noticed it when they got those picks.
Well, a real clip and save moment here. We are on the same page with some of our prognostications after the fact here, and as far as how we think it's going to impact the 2018 season and beyond, and there are some things that we do not agree on characteristically, so it'll be very interesting to see how it goes forward. But when you're pairing together three original FDH Lounge dignitaries, it is always a red letter day in America. I dare say something that should be a national holiday and should be observed as such, but that's just my own sort of biased opinion on that. So good to have both of you here. I know we will be continuing to talk football in the time ahead, both here and also Gridiron and Hardwood, Jason's great new project. So we will have that talk going forward in the time ahead. Chris, thank you for being on today. Thank you for joining.
Thank you. It was a good time. And by the way, it is a holiday. I took the day off.
Yes, it should be. It absolutely should be. Jason, thanks to you as well.
No problem. Always enjoy it.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today and listening in on FDH Lounge mini episode number 982.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.